Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome back to News and Views. This Thursday marked the 43rd anniversary of the Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision that allowed women in the United States to have access to legal and safe abortion services. But the national debate about abortion has never been more contentious. One of the leading reproductive health experts in the U.S. is David Grimes in Chapel Hill, who's the author of Every Third Woman in America. News and Views producer Clayton Hinkle talked with Grimes about the increasing numbers of legislative efforts to limit access to abortion services.
Well, Dr. Grimes, thank you so much for being with us on News and Views this morning.
My pleasure.
Before we talk about where we are today, talk, if you would, a little bit about that ruling that really was pivotal in terms of women's rights in America.
Well, it's important to understand that Roe v. Wade really stood on the shoulders of Griswold v. Connecticut, which made private discussions between a doctor and a patient about contraception legal. And that dates back to 1965. So it was a natural evolution, and again, rests on the 14th Amendment to the Constitution as well. It's a fundamental civil right.
Well, we've heard from others on this program about how the decision Roe v. Wade has been chipped away at by state legislatures and the courts over the years. Talk, if you would, about how legal abortions have been transformed since the ruling.
Well, in the last 3 years in particular, we've seen an epidemic, an unparalleled epidemic of anti-abortion legislation in states across the country. For example, between 2011 and 2013, there are more anti-abortion laws passed than in the entire prior decade, so this is truly unprecedented and also, I should say, unwarranted.
Well, talk, if you would, about a little bit about why that is. Is it a changing climate? Of course, in North Carolina, we've seen a shift in the last few years to a much more conservative agenda at the state level.
There have actually been research studies done around the country looking at what are predictors of passage of these targeted regulation of abortion provider laws or TRAP laws. And it's not religiosity. It's not the proportion of Catholics in the state. What is the single significant predictor of these laws is control of both houses of the state legislature and the governor's office by the Republican Party. This is a Republican campaign to drive women into the back alley once again.
Some folks may remember when Pat McCrory was running as governor, he was asked in one of the debates, would you support further restrictions on abortion? He said he would not. And when it came to signing a bill that indeed did that, he said, well, it was more about safety of clinics. It had nothing to do with restriction.
That is correct. He said he would not further restrict abortion in North Carolina, yet he did sign into law Senate Bill 353, which opened the door for further regulations. It's important to understand that this is public health perversion. In public health, we identify a problem, develop solutions, implement them, then monitor the success. Here we see a very brisk legislative response to a non-problem. Abortion is extraordinarily safe. In contrast, childbirth in America continues to get more dangerous year by year.
I think advocates of the legislation will argue that the idea is to ensure that all of these clinics are safe, they're well managed, and won't harm women. I think that's something that most people will agree is probably a good thing, but you don't see that as the primary intent of many of these bills.
Oh, no. It's quite clear that the purpose of these bills is to drive abortion out of business and turn women into the back alley once again. Again, the claim that these laws are designed to protect patient safety are specious. They're really specious. Let me give you an example. Last winter in North Carolina, more than 70 North Carolinians died of influenza. Most of those had not been immunized. What response did the state General Assembly take to that to promote or encourage vaccination? Nothing. In the most recent year for which we have information, which is 2012, 23 people in North Carolina died in boating accidents. So the boating fatality rate for that year was 5 deaths per 100,000 registered boats. In contrast, the number of abortion deaths in that year was zero, and the rate was zero, as it has been for decades. What did the state assembly do about boating deaths? Nothing. Many of those could have been prevented by wearing life jackets. So the claim that this is about safety is clearly a lie.
What's the impact of these bills?
Well, what we're seeing is that women are being forced to travel already, the most notorious examples being Mississippi, where these laws have been in place for many years. And now we're seeing in the news that women who live in West Texas are being forced back across state lines to get care in New Mexico. And what we're seeing is a return to what I call the sandwich years of 1970 to 72, before Roe v. Wade, when 80% of all the abortions in the nation were provided in just two states, New York and California. Now, if you're a woman living in Little Rock and you have to take a 1,200-mile bus ride to New York City to get care, that's terribly expensive and it also compromises your safety.
And I imagine timing is also a factor as well.
Absolutely. What these laws do is not to deter women so much, but to delay them. And one of the most important predictors of safety is the duration of the pregnancy or gestational age. The earlier, the safer. So these force women into later, more expensive and more risky procedures.
You've written in your book that access to safe and legal abortions is an economic issue as well. Talk about that if you could.
Abortion has really been a social equalizer. If you look at the utilization of abortion by folks, women who are impoverished and women who are of a minority race have higher use of abortion than do other women. It's very difficult to bring a child into this world whom you cannot care for, you cannot educate, you cannot clothe, you cannot feed. So in addition, abortion has not only benefits for the family, but for society at large. Every dollar invested in abortion or contraception yields savings that are commensurate to those with immunization programs, which are a model of public health prevention.
You've also detailed that legalization of abortion has improved children's health, and I think that that's something that might be confusing on the surface to our listeners, so I'll have you explain it.
Well, immediately after abortion became legal, we saw a quick fall off in these very premature births, many of which may have been attempts at abortion. And one of the most important predictors of children's well-being is spacing. And what this does is to allow families to space their children several years apart, which improves the health of the children as well as that of the mother.
And of course, many of our listeners may remember back to 2013, where we saw the motorcycle safety bill transformed into a bill that restricted access. Have we seen anything like that in other states as well? Perhaps not as blatant.
Yes, Senate Bill 353, which opened the door for further regulation of clinics. The State Department of Health and Human Services has developed a very reasonable response to that law. Well, now we'll have to see what happens. There was testimony in Raleigh in December of 19th of last year on this, but we need to hope as North Carolinians that this law does not become a political football. Medicine is just simply too complex to be left to lay people. We should not see state legislatures trying to practice medicine without a license.
And what do you say to people who say, well, it's not about safety, it's a moral issue?
That's fine. But I think if we can learn anything from history, it is you cannot legislate personal decisions. The best example of that, I think, is prohibition. 100 years ago, when the United States decided to make the manufacture and distribution of alcohol illegal, did it stop drinking? No. It simply forced it underground. Hundreds of people suffered and died from tainted products. And the only beneficiaries were criminals like Al Capone.
What would your advice be to legislators who are coming back into session in North Carolina in just a few days as they look at some of these rules and regulations and perhaps may be tempted to make things a little bit more restrictive?
I would say, show me the evidence that there's a problem. Abortion is exceptionally safe. Indeed, the risk of death from abortion in the United States is less than the risk of death from an injection of penicillin, and that's been the case for years. The risk of having a complication is a few percent. In contrast, the risk of having a complication from pregnancy and childbirth is 60%. That's 60. Those are CDC figures. So I would suggest they find real targets, real public health issues, and address those. Or as the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists pointed out in a letter in the Charlotte Observer last year, get out of our exam rooms.
Well, that's probably a good place to wrap this up. Dr. Grimes is a leading reproductive health care expert and the author of Every Third Woman in America. Dr. Grimes, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's it for another edition of News and Views. Look for us on the web at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Hinkle, this is Chris Fitzsimon. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon, director of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com. News and Views, a weekly look at state and policy issues, is a production of the North Carolina Justice Center.